Thanks for checking out the Greater Church podcast today. We're praying that wherever you find yourself on the journey, that this message would be encouraging to you. And now, here's today's message.
Invitations. Little do we know that invitations are something that happen on a regular basis. But invitations are peculiar in themselves. And as kids, we would love invitations. We would love when somebody would ask us, hey, can you come sit with us at a table, at the cool kids table? And we love to hang out with them. Hey, can you come play? We love the invitation. This stuff doesn't happen anymore. But I remember when I was a kid, I loved to hear my invitation. What do I mean by that? I mean that I was laying in my bed and it was probably after school, 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And I would hear my invitation. It would be rocks that my friends would throw at my house and they'll hit me in the, they'll hit the window, pop, pop. And I would know. And they're like, come outside to play. And I say, go tell my mom. She won't let me. Go ask her. And they would go. Some of y'all know. Some of y'all are still on Instagram. Y'all text each other. Hey, come play. You're like 30. Praise God. But for the most part, invitations as kids, man, we loved them. We loved all type of invitations. As we grew up, the invitations started to get a little bit tricky. Why? Because things started to change. Now we notice that we get invited. We get invited to things on a regular basis more than you can imagine. If I told you how many hundreds of times you are invited a day, you would not believe me. Think about how many times you turn on your phone and you're invited to buy a product or to eat something or to go somewhere or to talk to somebody. So many invitations come that now as humans, we're bombarded with these things and we're just kind of like, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. We get invited on Facebook for people to be our friends. Bro, I don't even know you. Who are you? Why are you trying to be my friend? You're a friend of a friend that's a friend of another friend. And that doesn't mean I know you. But invitations are a tricky thing, especially when we grow up. Because events in our life, because of things that happen in our life, we find ourselves in places sometimes where the invitations that we get, we don't turn around and give those out. Very seldom will we invite anybody to our life. Very seldom will we invite anybody to know the real us. We have parties and we invite the people that we like. Oh, she don't smell good. Lace front is all crooked. I don't like her. We find ourselves in places where we don't hang out with just anybody. It's difficult to invite people into our life. It's difficult to invite people on the journey with us. In John chapter 4, where we see Jesus, he had just came off of, in the chapter before, a conversation that is the complete cornerstone of Christianity, where we see him talking to Nicodemus. And in John chapter 3, verse 16, all of us could quote this together, for God so loved the world, and it happened there. And we see after that how John the Baptist, he gets in jail, he's locked up, and all of a sudden Jesus comes into the scene, and Jesus' disciples are now baptizing because John is in jail. My dog got locked up, and they won't let him out. And Jesus is there with his disciples, and after a long day of baptism, Jesus says, I need to go from Judea to Galilee. The Bible says, he needed to go through Samaria. I want to show you a map real quick, because the idea of him needing to, you would think it's understandable. But see, this curve that goes around to the Dead Sea or to Perea on that side, that was the way that the Jews would travel when they would go through there. Why? Because Jerusalem, Judea, which is this lower section here, and then Samaria, which is right in the middle, and then Galilee, which is up at the top, the Jewish people would not walk through Samaria because they hated them. So what they would do is that they would walk on the other side, that frisbee-looking thing or that boomerang-looking line. But Jesus said, I needed to go through Samaria. Understand, the Samaritans were Jews, right? Who during the Assyrian time and when Babylon, when they were taken captive, these Jews, the Assyrians, would bring people from other nations and they would put them together because everybody was a captive, and they would give them different gods to serve, and they would get different ideas from different countries, and they would find themselves in a place where they started serving foreign gods, where they started marrying people who were not Jewish, for the bloodline of the Jews had to be kept pure. You could only marry a Jew. But these people, these Samaritans, had married so many different people. So the Jews hated them. And in turn, they hated the Jews because they say, you're a half-breed. You're not like me. Jesus said, I needed to go through there. I need to go there. And I believe that Jesus is saying, I need to go through here. I need to go through Acworth. I need to go through Kennesaw. There's some people that are broken. There's some people that don't know me. There's some people that might hate me. They might doubt me, but I need to go through there. Understand that the reason why Jesus needed to go there is because of this Samaritan woman. Jesus understood the possibilities. Jesus understood what could come about with this woman. And we're going to see as this story unfolds the beautiful purpose and how intelligent Jesus is, but how much more is his love towards us. In that while we are sinners, broken, messed up individuals, Jesus is not going around the long way to avoid us. He's going to go right through the middle where people don't want to go, where people say it smells bad, where people say it doesn't look right. There's too much sin. In the middle of all that, Jesus finds himself right in the middle of our mess. He doesn't go around us. He comes right to us. Jesus is sitting there, and the Bible says in John chapter 4, and he's tired, he's weary, he's had an amazing day, and he kind of sits next to this well, and this woman is there. And as we look at this story, we're going to see that there are three particular invitations that Jesus kind of puts out there. And the first one is that he invites her to the cup. As he's sitting there with this Samaritan woman, he turns to her, and she's bringing out water. And at this time, she shouldn't have been out there. She actually should have been there earlier, and we'll talk about it in just a second. But he's sitting there, and he's tired, and he turns to this girl. He says, hey, can I get some water? She doesn't ask him, do you want Fiji, Zephyr Hills? She doesn't ask him any of that. She turns around to him and tells him, why are you talking to me? Excuse me, boo-boo. I don't talk to you. I don't like you. Jesus says, if you knew who was asking you for water, you would ask me for water. I'd give you more water than you can imagine. I'd give you water that has never run dry. I would give you living waters. That's the Chino Per. It's the Cuban International Virgin. Give me water. And I can hear Jesus saying that to us today. Very seldom in scriptures do we ever see where Jesus asked somebody to do something for them. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but he came to serve. Yet in this instant, we see him sitting next to a well, asking a woman, first of all, asking a Samaritan, second of all, asking a person who was in sin at that very moment, in all word, in all actuality of that word. She was in sin, and yet Jesus tells her, serve me. Give me water. Give me something to drink. What a picture of a God that we serve, that regardless of where you find yourself in, he's saying, come to me, give me water, give me your life, give me your time. But Jesus, how do I give you water? How do I do this? I think it's a clear reflection of Matthew chapter 25. And we kind of went through there a little bit when we had our Above All series a little while ago. But verses 34 through 46 gives us a very clear illustration of what it looks like to actually serve Jesus. And look at what it says in Matthew chapter 25. It says, then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you by the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him and say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? The king will answer and say to them, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it for one of the least of my brethren, you did it for me. Man, our life is to be a reflection of who Jesus was. And Jesus was a servant of all. Our life is to look like handing people a cup of water every single turn that we can. It looks like us. Here's an opportunity that we have as Greater Church. It's not just a systematic organization that we come in and we're trying to be a part of it so that it can grow. No, it's actually what Jesus asked us to do. The one that you gave a water to was as if you were giving it to Jesus. So the moment that we jump on a team and we serve Jesus, because we serve people and we hold the door for him, it's as if we were holding a door for Jesus. The moment that we put a chair out with some stuff on top of that, it's as if we were doing it for Jesus. Jesus is here saying, when you do it for the least of these, do it for me. When you're in the back and you're taking care of kids and you're making sure that they're learning lessons that are going to help them all through life, you're not only doing it for the kid, you're doing it for Jesus. You want to know how you serve Jesus? Serve him with your time, with your talent, with your treasure. By giving of that to people. Give of your time. So many people have come here and I was blown away. Understand, we're 8 weeks old. That's crazy for me to even say. This has been a journey. We've been trying to do this thing called Greater Church, and what a beautiful picture we have that after 8 weeks, look at us. We're a family. But me and Mallory were outside. She's one of the team members. We were sitting outside, and we're looking at the people coming in through the doors, and we're like, these are team now. We're looking at them, and we're like, look at all these people. She's with us from the beginning. And it was funny because before there was a beginning, me and my wife and some of the team, we look at Mallory and we're like, she likes us? Like, she's smart. She's from Auburn, War Eagle. She's like, shout out to the U, turn up. Sorry. We were like, she likes us? She's blonde and like, we don't, you know, she's like one of our first white people. We were like, oh my God, come. We love you. It was like, she likes us. Then I'm almost in tears as I'm sitting here with Mallory, and we're sitting out there and we're watching as so many people walk in through the doors, and they're not walking in just to hear a message, but they're walking in to set up pipe and drape. They're walking in to hold doors. They're walking in to actually be a part of what we're doing, to serve the kids, to serve you, to give you a cup of water. Because as they do it for you, they do it unto Jesus. And I want to take just a second. If you join team for the first time and you graduated Grove Track and you're going to have your graduation, we're going to honor you. But can you do me a favor, Greater Church? Can we make some noise for all of our new team, for everybody who came out today? Thank you so much. I love you. I would call all of you by name, but I just want to say thank you publicly. We're honored that you would go on the journey with us. And for those of you that are not on the journey, come on the journey with us. It's going to be a fun one. We're going to look back 4 or 5 years down the line and we're going to be like, man, you remember when we were inside that high school? It was weird, but praise God. And we were like yelling on the microphone and it was so loud but it was amazing. We're going to have stories because we decided to get our cup. We actually decided to give somebody. It's an invitation to the cup. Not only that, but then Jesus has this conversation with her where he gives her his invitation to freedom. Jesus turns around and he tells us in John chapter 4, verse 13, she says, I want this water. Give me this water so that I won't thirst no more. Jesus answered and said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Keep going. And that's the only one. Jesus says to her, whoever drinks of this water, I got ahead of myself, will never thirst again. Bear Grylls, what the name is? Grylls, Bear Grylls, Man versus Wild. Y'all ever seen that? Anybody ever watched that? There was this particular episode where he's sitting on a life raft and he's in the middle of the ocean. And as he's in the middle of the ocean, he's sitting there and he's telling you how to survive the elements. And you know what's the very first thing that he tells you? You're around water all around you. You're on a boat. Not only are you on a boat and there's water all around you, but the first thing that's going to come up on you is that you're going to get thirsty. Please be careful that when you get thirsty, that you don't drink of the water that's all around you. First inclination, there's water. I'm going to drink it, bro. I'm thirsty. I want water. But see, here's the thing. When you drink salt water, it'll begin to dehydrate you even quicker. It'll make you more thirsty. So you have to wait and you have to drink fresh water, because fresh water is going to actually calm the thirst and it's actually going to hydrate you and make you better. This is not a picture of our life. But we have all around us broken vessels, messed up water all around us. But we begin to drink these salty waters because we're thirsty and we cling on to this relationship and we cling on to this friendship and we cling on to this drug. We cling on to this drink. We find ourselves in a place where we're drinking salty water and we're trying to find joy in that. We're trying to find peace in that. But in reality, you're not going to find joy or peace in that. You're going to find joy in the presence of Jesus. You need fresh living water. You need the presence of Jesus, for it is only Jesus that's going to be able to quench your thirst. Peace is found in Jesus. Love, joy, kindness, happiness is found in Jesus. Doesn't matter how much money you're going to make, there's no way that you're going to be able to buy peace. You might buy something that's going to give you peace for a little while, but when it's you by your lonesome and your thoughts, peace is not going to be found there. We have this Jesus that says that he gives us this living water. This living water will bring about the peace that we look for. Come on, if you believe it, can you put your hands in here? Greater Church, you got to shout at me. You got to get with me. In verse 15, Now we get to the invitation to freedom. In verse 15, the woman turns to him and she says to him, sir, give me this water that I may not thirst. I don't want to live this life no more like this. I don't want to thirst and I don't want to come back here. Which is the final part of that verse. I don't want to come back here. Why was she saying that? Because the women of that time, Samaria, they would actually come in the morning together and they would go and they would draw from the well and they would draw their water. But here we find this woman who is alone. Jesus knew that she was alone, but she was sitting there drawing the water by herself. Why is it that she didn't come with somebody else? Why? Because she had been drained already, because she had a reputation in that neighborhood. She couldn't walk with the rest of the woman, with the rest of the women, because she was ostracized. She was pushed to the side because of the things that she had done in her life. She no longer wanted the drama, because drama drains. This woman was a vessel that was broken. She had cracks. She had mess ups. There are things in our life, man, that we allow to drain the peace, the joy, the love that God has given us. And because of mistakes in our life, we find ourselves in a place where we're saying, I don't want to be around people because people hate me and I hate people. And we isolate ourselves and we find ourselves not in a moment of solitude, but of isolation, where we say, I don't want people in my life because, one, I've done some really bad things. But on the opposite side of that, people have done some really bad things to me. It's not the place that you want to find yourself in. And can I tell you that Jesus is in the business of taking broken pieces and putting them back together again? Can I tell you that Jesus can actually mend your broken heart, that he can stitch up every one of those hearts, that he can heal every one of your wounds? You don't have to go through life doing this thing alone. Jesus is actually there with you. And though the drama is going to drain you, Jesus is here to continue to fill you up. Understand this. Think about this. Jesus is talking to this woman at the well. This woman has drama in her life. Jesus knows what's going on in her life, but yet and still, he says, I am still going to come to you, and I need to go to you. I need to speak to you. With all of her mess ups, with everything that she's done wrong, Jesus, as pure as Jesus is, you're telling me that he still wanted to talk to her? Absolutely, because he wanted to heal her. Not only did he want to heal her, but he actually wanted to use her. How can he use such a broken, messed up vessel? Why? Because it's never about us. It's never about us being good enough to hold the door. It's never good enough about us grabbing a microphone and singing. It's never going to be about us being good enough to do anything. But it's in our weakness that God rejoices. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9 through 12. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities and reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distress, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. See, Jesus didn't come to find the wise things of this world. He did not come to find the best things in this world. No, he actually came to find some broken, messed up individuals that he can show his strength through. He doesn't need you to be perfect. He doesn't need you to have it all figured out. He just needs you to be available. That's the only ability that Jesus is looking for you. For you to be able to say, God, I don't have it all figured out. God, I got some scars on me. I made some mistakes, Jesus. I'm not strong enough to do any of the things that you're asking me to do. That's fine. At that moment, you are a perfect candidate for God's grace. For in him, you will be found strong. Because in your weakness is where God shows out. In moments of rock bottom is when you're the closest to Jesus. This woman is broken. She's standing there before Jesus. She has no ability to be able to save herself. But Jesus said, I needed to go to you. I have this cup. If I can just give you some of this living water, I can actually help you. Come on, if you believe it, can you put your hands together for Jesus all over this place? He loves you regardless of what you've done and regardless of what you haven't done. Chapter 4, verse 19, we're introduced to this final section where it's the invitation to the mountain. This woman turns to him and he says, I noticed that you're a prophet. Or it's going to come up here on the screens in just a second. He says, the woman said to him, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain. And the Jews, you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. Jesus, or this woman, begins to put up this mountain or this separation. Understand, remember what I said about the Jews and the Samaritans, that they couldn't be together because the Jews said, you're a half-breed. You're nothing like me. You're not really God's people. But yet these people still had a love and a hunger for God. They just had it erroneous. They had weird ways of showing God that he loved them. Is that not a picture, though, of what it looks like in so many churches and Christianity all across this world, where unbelievers have this way of thinking, and then you have a sect of believers, of Christians, that look at the unbelievers and say, you smoke too much, you drink too much, you sin too much, there's no way that you can come to me. And inadvertently, we create this mountain where unbelievers cannot come to this place. I have a friend of mine, and this isn't a story of like Smith Wigglesworth or Martin Luther King, something that happened years ago. This is actually something that happened in my friend's life. He was living in Brooklyn, New York. Shout out to Tony Heron, BK, New York in the building. I have no idea. I'm from Miami. I love it. I was born there, but then I went to Miami for the rest of my life. But this man, he's a friend of mine's, and he would sit there on his in his room, and he would have a window that would face down. Now, understand that in New York, there's houses on top, and then there's businesses on the bottom, if you've ever been there. And as he's watching, he used to always watch men and women that would walk through his house, and there was a church next to his house, next to the store where he was at. And he said, Chino, I would always see as these men and women, their ties would flap in the wind as they were going to church. And every day I would sit there and watch them because I knew that on Sundays I would hear the music and I would see them and I would look out the window and I would watch their ties flap in the wind. And Chino, it broke my heart every single day because I was like, man, I wish I can go to church. Man, I wish I can go to church. Why couldn't you go to church? I just didn't own a tie. I thought you had to have a tie to be able to get into God's house. I thought you had to have a suit to get into God's house. You see the mentality that sometimes people who are outside of God's house put on themselves? They think, there's no way that God can accept me. I've made too many mistakes. I've had abortions. I've had divorces. I've done some things in my life, Chino, that there's no way that God can forgive me. I don't have a tie. Please understand that the only reason why I'm wearing this suit right now is because I went to Miami and I ate way too much and I'm trying to conceal. But I will never allow that thing to ever stop anybody from coming into God's house. It doesn't matter about a suit. That doesn't make me holy. The power of Jesus is what makes you holy. It is Christ and Christ alone. That has nothing to do with no jacket. God forbid that us as a church, we would ever find ourselves in a place where people in the world would say, I can't go there because I'm not like them. And if you would only know that we are all the same. We got the same issues. We're broken just as you are broken. But the only difference is that we snatched this stupid divider. We snatched this mountain away. And we said, God, we're going to come to you in spirit and in truth. Spirit is the power of God. Truth is that he loves you, that he's not intimidated by your sin, that if you confess with your mouth and you believe in your heart, you shall be saved. Come on, if you believe it, make some noise in this place, Greater Church. There's mountains that people have put in their life. There's these walls that people have put. And me and you, we need to speak to those walls. We need to speak to those mountains. In Mark chapter 11, can you put that up for just a second? The disciples are finding themselves in this place where they're asking Jesus. And they're talking to Jesus. And Jesus turns to them and he says, for assuredly, I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be removed and cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believe that those things he says will be done, he will have whatever he says. Jesus is passing by a fig tree and he curses the fig tree. They go around and they come back. By the time they come back, Peter turns to Jesus and said, Jesus, look at this fig tree. You spoke to it and all of a sudden it withered. Jesus says, why does that amaze you? Don't you know that you have that power inside of you? Your cup is full. You just don't know it. But you have the same power in and through you. Do you understand that just like I withered that, you can speak to that mountain, that division, and you can cast it into the sea so that people who don't know Jesus, when we speak to them and we tell them, God is not mad at you. He's madly in love with you. God doesn't hate you. God doesn't detest you. God is not intimidated by you. Your homosexuality doesn't discredit you. Your abortion doesn't disqualify you. The things that you've done in your past don't make you unqualified for God's grace. When you begin to speak to that mountain, that thing gets cast in the ocean and that person is set free. The power of an invitation can set anybody free. The power of an invitation.
Hello, everyone. My name is Andler, and I'm a servant here on team at Greater Church. And I'm going to share with you guys my story. My family always seemed to believe in God. We would always go to church and here and there, but I just never really got it. I never really understood it. And we would go, and I'd be kind of like a kid, a teenager that's like wearing an AC/DC shirt to church. And if for those of you that know who AC/DC is, just the picture doesn't associate with church. But anyway, as a teenager, I kind of started researching and trying to find logic into everything that I was doing. I was researching into different religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, you can name it. I was learning all about it, and even at times practicing it, whatever that means. But the more I found out, I was just like, the more religions I learned, I was like, how can there be one God if there's so many gods? Like, I just never understood that. And like one thing led to another, and as I was just researching, I found myself doing drugs and alcohol. And long story short, that path led to one thing, led to another, and I ended up going to jail. It wasn't because I didn't do anything crazy. It was just I just happened to be at the bad time, at a bad place, a bad time. And after that whole incident with my life, I started really started reflecting on what was happening with my life. What did I want to do? Where was I going? And that's like, that's when I really kind of discovered philosophy. Not Jesus yet, not yet. And then even philosophy, that was just like another thing. I was in high school studying philosophy and hermeneutics and all these things. And none of that made sense. It didn't give me more answers. It just gave me more questions that I couldn't even fathom to think about anything. It was just, I just had even more questions. And until one day, a friend of mine, he was having a talent show, and he needed a guitar player because his guitar player bailed out on him. And then he asked me if I was like, hey, man, can you play? And I was like, yeah, sure. Where's it at? He's like, at church. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, man, I guess. You know, kind of like, you're like, you're a good buddy, so I'll play for you, whatever. So I went to church. I played. Whatever, it was good. I'm sitting down in the congregation, kind of like you guys, and he comes up and he gives his testimony, and he starts talking about how God had that same week had healed his brother completely from cancer. And I was like, wow, man, like I had no idea you were going through that. And he starts crying, he's just breaking down on stage, and he was my best friend, and I ran up to him, I hugged him. I was just breaking, like, we were both breaking down. It was just not a pretty picture. And we were just, like, two men crying, or two young boys, I guess, at the time. I was, like, 15. So we were just crying on stage, and that was that. And at the end of the whole sermon, all the crying, I was like, man, I really, really, really want to know this God. Like, you know, I've heard all these stories, but nothing like this. I really want to know this God that heals, that restores. Is just like, this is amazing. But I still don't understand. I still don't get it. I still can't seem to just let go of all the other knowledge that I know. And I asked him, I was like, what can I do? And then he just said, keep coming, man. Just keep coming. And I'm living proof of what a simple invitation can do.
John chapter 4, we're introduced to this Samaritan woman. In a city that has been ostracized, this woman lived in that ostracized city, herself ostracized, pushed away. A Samaritan, a woman who had been divorced plenty of times, yet Jesus meets her at the well. He says, I need to go through Samaria. He meets this woman, and an entire city is changed. Understand that Jesus didn't go looking for the mayor of that city. He didn't look for the religious leaders. They had their own religious. He didn't look for the high religious leaders or influential men and women in that city. Jesus, he himself being the top, actually went to Samaria and he looked for the bottom. He looked for the broken, the hurting, the lost. He found a woman. He was not only interested in saving her, but he was actually interested in propelling her into ministry. This woman, her name is Fotine. She actually has a name. This woman actually went back to Samaria and she began to tell people, listen to this man who has told me everything that I've done. And for 2 days, there was a revival where men and women of Samaria came to Jesus to come hear the good news, the gospel of Jesus, because this broken, messed up woman actually stepped out of her comfort zone and she allowed God to use. The story didn't end there. History records this woman, this Samaritan woman by the well, Fotine. It records that she was an evangelist and that she continued to preach the gospel of Jesus. She wasn't even considered by many as one of the apostles because of so many people that she was reaching, to the point that Nero finally caught wind of what this woman was doing and he incarcerated her. And he incarcerated her. His daughter, Nero's daughter, went to go speak to this woman, Fotine, the Samaritan woman, the woman that had been divorced 5 different times and was actually living with a man that wasn't her husband at the time, but yet God had turned her life upside down. This daughter goes up to her and she herself is saved. Nero flips. He's like, this woman? My daughter now believes, because understand that Nero was trying to kill everything that had the name Christian on it. He hated Christians, but he was saying, now my daughter believes in this foolishness. He takes Fotine and he throws her into a dry well where she is martyred, where she gave her life to Jesus. Think about that broken, messed up woman. Think about the story of so many people that have got this microphone and shared to you. We're not perfect. We don't got it all figured out. What we did is that we answered the invitation. Would you bow your head and close your eyes?
Thanks for listening to our podcast today. The mission of Greater Church is to reach the lost and empower the found. We pray this message met you wherever you find yourself on the journey. If God is using this ministry to impact your life, please help us to continue to spread the word by investing today. You can give at greater.church. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media at @mygreaterchurch.